Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the London School of Economics on a Saturday evening, which is a rarity and a wonderful thing. My name is Ricky Burdett. I'm a professor of urban studies here at the LSE, and I run a research center which is called LSE Cities, which is interested in the relationship between physical form and social issues. We've been here for a number of years, and it's a fantastic occasion to join up with the LSA. Will Hunter, the director, will tell you a little bit about it in a moment and about this evening's event. It's a wonderful occasion to join up to be able to host Kengo Kuma, one of the world's most exciting and in many ways challenging architects who never repeats the same thing. And it's just extraordinary to see so many of you here on a Saturday evening instead of either protesting against Brexit, a very valuable thing to do, or enjoying a beer out in the warm summer's day. I just want to say a couple of things. I'm very, very happy, Will, that we're able to work together. This is a new collaboration. Before coming to the LSE, I set up the Architecture Foundation and worked with many others on a small little gallery called the 9H Gallery. So to see independent organizations like the LSA thrive in the way it is and really having an impact on the profession and education is really important. The LSE itself, if you look at this room, you can see that not much has changed for about 20, 30, 40 years. Some important people have spoken here, from Nelson Mandela to Bill Clinton, but otherwise the architecture has remained the same. So we're investing in a few exciting things outside Kuma. It's not all depressing. We have Richard Rogers' new building just outside. We'll be ready next year. O'Donnell and Toomey have built a student center, which is completed. And Grafton Architects will be also finishing a new building on Lincoln's Inn Fields. So we have an opportunity tonight to hear an architect who's working internationally, partly from his base in Tokyo. And all I can say is that I was the recipient, Kuma-san, of your extraordinary generosity in several occasions in hosting me and others. And I think there's a wonderful opportunity to make sure that Kuma's work and ideas are also realized here in London. But I want to pass on to Will Hunter, who will introduce and chair the evening. Thank you very much, and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Ricky. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the London School of Architecture's inaugural annual lecture. Founded in 2015, the LSA is a new school offering a postgraduate program of architecture. The school has a close relationship with practice and works with 100 firms in London to offer placements and deliver collaborative design projects. We also have a close relationship with London itself. All our work is based in the capital city to afford our speculations deeper connections with history, place, and people. For this evening's first annual lecture, I'm delighted to welcome Kengo Kuma. Following the London Festival of Architecture's overall theme, Kuma's talk is called Architecture and Identity. One of the world's leading architects, he was born in Yokohama and studied architecture at the University of Tokyo and Columbia University in New York. In 1990, he opened Kengo Kuma and Associates, which now has offices in Tokyo and Paris. He is currently professor at the University of Tokyo's Graduate School of Architecture. In contrast to the European focus of the older generation of Japanese architects, Kuma is focused on Japanese tradition and how it can be rethought for the 21st century. Some of his earlier projects, such as the M2 building, took a more postmodern approach and used motifs such as classical columns to create form. Yet it was studying in America that led Kuma to see the history of Japanese architecture as having a parallel weight to Western traditions. In contrast to the monumentality of this older generation, Kuma sees the monument as secondary to space, a view which is shaped by influences such as Yoshinobu Ashihara and Fumihiko Maki. Kuma uses materials in unexpected and thrilling ways, twisting traditions to create new effects. Where others have used concrete and glass, Kuma has explored wood for its human scale, fragility, and changing qualities over time. At this headquarters for Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy, traditional timber is brought back to Tokyo, where you would expect to see a building of steel and glass. In Atami, the water glasshouse uses the spatial conventions of no theatre design and the idea of the void, yet rendered in glass and water so architecture seems to evaporate. Kuma has been critical of other architects who try and implant their own brand of architecture onto any site around the world. As he has previously explained it, I like to find the character and tradition of the place and try to make real collaboration between the location and my ideas. This approach is very much in evidence in two of the numerous projects we will be hearing more about this evening, the Olympic Stadium in Tokyo, which will open in 2020, and the new V&A Museum in Dundee, which will open this September. The Olympic Stadium has a reference point in Kenzo Tang's soaring structures for the 1964 Tokyo Olympics, which Kumar saw when he was 10 years old and which triggered his interest in becoming an architect. But instead of using the 20th century staples of concrete and steel, Kumar has made a low-slung, human-scaled design that would be built from timber, sourced from parts of Japan affected by the earthquake and tsunami of 2011. This humble, craftsman-like structure stands in stark contrast to the abandoned stadium proposal by Zaha Hadid. At the V&A Dundee, Kumar's competition-winning design seeks to reconnect the site with both the city and the River Tay. Influenced by nature and the dramatic cliffs of Scotland's east coast, the exterior of the building is made of 2,500 stone panels. All the panels have a unique size and shape, and their placement took 7 months to complete. Kumar's approach to reinvigorating tradition and reinterpreting place has much in common with the work of the LSA. On Thursday, we celebrated our second crop of graduates opening their graduation show at Somerset House. The theme of the show is Connect and is open until Tuesday if you'd like to visit. We also have launched a magazine as well, which you can pick up for free if you manage to get there. The evening has been made possible by our partners, the Cities Programme at the London School of Economics, the Japan Foundation, and the ACE Hotel. Thank you so much for supporting this initiative. Without further ado, it now gives me great pleasure to hand over to Kengo Kumar. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you very much for the kind introductions and also inviting me to this great place. I didn't know Bill Clinton did a talk here. And today, I want to show many recent projects, including the V&A and the stadium. As Ricky mentioned, basically I didn't want to copy myself. So every project, I tried to find some new material and some new detail and some new technologies. And that approach is a little bit different from former generation. Former generation, for example, Tadao Ando-san is a very good example. He established a very strong his own style. To establish a style was very important for his generation. I think it's a kind of branding method. Brand needs some identity. If identity became clear, that can automatically reproduce in different places. But my method is different. Before the identity of architects, the identity of the place, the history of the place, landscape of the place, nature of place, are more important, I think. Then for each project, I try to find something identical. And the first slide. The first project is the Hiroshige Museum. And Hiroshige you don't know Hiroshige so well. He is one of the best Hiroshige and ukiyo-e artists in the end of 19th century. And his influence on Europe and on America was huge at that time. Actually, Vincent van Gogh, he learned many things from Hiroshige. And the Impressionists, Gough, Cézanne, those guys, was very much inspired by Hiroshige. And also Frank Lloyd Wright, he was a big collector of Hiroshige's art. And he came to Japan many times to buy Hiroshige. And that's the reason why he designed the Imperial Hotel in Tokyo in 1923. And the Hiroshige method is a kind of super juxtaposition of layers. And layers, when I designed the Hiroshige Museum, I studied the philosophy of Hiroshige, the method of Hiroshige. It's very interesting, and it looks very contemporary. So you see the layering method, and also he tried to the combine layer of nature and layer of artifact. The first layer, you see the layers of rain. So he did use rain as a kind of layer, and he is a pick up four layers of rains, and then after the layer of rain, so he is the silhouette of mountain and some people, and then the nature and artifact are totally integrated. So this is another good example. And for me, this method is very interesting. The nature, architecture, all the layers, how to the super juxtapose those layers can be the one new method for architectural design. And actually, Frank Lloyd Wright tried to do that. And his architecture, the transparency is important. To use local material, also important. And he did use the Japanese material at that time, 1923. The result was very unique. But because of his strong style, people cannot find the uniqueness of his method. But this is a Vincent van Gogh's work. It looks very strange, but he respected Hiroshige very much. And this is another example of the inference. And Frank Lloyd Wright, this is his own drawing. At that time, he did his own. And the method of drawing very much influenced by ukiyo-e's method. And at historians pointed out the strong influence from Hiroshige on that rendering of lobby house. And my Hiroshige Museum, another example of layering, super juxtaposition. And for every project, I try to find the material from the place. And this is the Hiroshige Museum was in the small village. And behind the village, it's a beautiful mountain. I pick up the wood from the mountain. In that case, the cedar. The plan shows the relationship of mountain and museum. And always this kind of the mountain and the village together. And because without mountain, people could not survive, could not live. Because every material came from mountain, and also the energy. They didn't have electric companies, gas company. Every energy came from mountain. It's a kind of infrastructure at that period. And also for agriculture, the fertilizer from mountain was very needed. And without mountain, Japanese could not survive. And always village sit at the edge of mountain. And this shows the relationship, the traditional relationship between nature and human. As always, live together. And Hiroshige Museum, I found an interesting shrine. And always, the edge of the mountain, people build shrine. Because shrine shows the rule of their life. Don't destroy mountain. Use mountain carefully. It's a message of shrine. But in 20th century, people forgotten that message, and the shrine was abandoned. And in that project, we cut the building through that hole, and the entrance, the mayors asked me to have the big entrance facing parking. And I said, this is very American method. No America, as I said. And the entrance should face a beautiful mountain. So that kind of mountain is called village mountain in Japanese, Sato-yama. We should reconnect the town center and shrine again by the building. And then in that sense, building is a kind of arch which connect town and nature. The same method was used for as Brian de Dandy, as I'll show you later, The Dundee Museum is a gate which connects River Tay and the town. And this is an entrance from backside. But this is not backside. In 20th century, parking becomes the main entrance, but parking should be the backside. This mountain should be the main entrance, I think. And another important thing for using material is use material as small unit. That method was used in Europe as well. For masonry structure, the unit is not big because people should carry the stone and brick. It's a human engagement. But concrete is a big volume. Wow. I think that's good. Yeah. Okay. And also the Asian wooden construction, as China, Korea, Japan's wooden construction was the main method. The people was carrying the wood by their own hands. This is another human engagement on material. But in 20th century, material, concrete, and human totally separated. So I want to recover human engagement on material. And then the wood, the small pieces of wood, is my favorite unit. And also, go back to Hiroshige, the lane, the lines of lane is a kind of layers, is the same effect by these lines of wood. And to use local materials possible, rice paper screens, the stone from the quarry of the village, and then the super juxtaposition of multiple layers. Adding the layers, is a method of addition. And as a wood is also used in the many unique way in Japan. The joinery of wood was very much sophisticated. It's very different from 2x4 method in America. The 2x4 method is a wood is not used as pieces. But this as a small pavilions, I learned many things from this Chidori toy. The Chidori toy has three joints, and piece by piece, they are fixing the structure, and without any nail and without any glue, because Japanese carpenter didn't trust metal. They can buy metal, I think, but they didn't trust the metal. The life of metal is very short, they know. And after this small pavilion, we tested the structural system. Also, this is possible by that joint. And the solution of the engineer is 10-meter high building, 3-story building by very tiny sticks. The dimension of the sticks is 6 centimeters by 6 centimeters. It's very tiny. This is a completion. And this is interior. No column. The sticks itself is supporting the building. And also the sticks is very useful to create the shelves. And then one single unit can make everything. The structures, shelves, boxes, furnitures, only by one single system. And also bleach, as we apply that system. In that case, we did use the bigger dimension wood. But the same as the previous project, we did use small pieces. And that system is very similar to the Olympic Stadium. The Olympic Stadium we did use as one part of the structure, but every wood was cut under 30 centimeters. And for that kind of big building, normally, as a big size glulam were often used. But glulam, the size of glulam reminds me concrete. And then as a concrete is a kind of enemy for me. then we did use the wood under 30 centimeters dimensions, and then we can create it, the human scale, even for a bigger building. And for the same village, Yusuhara village in Japan, we found this material. The thatch is they're making those beautiful roofs by thatch, and we did use the thatch for the facade. But again, not the big volume, the small pieces, small blocks made by thatch. And in Tokyo, we also try to find the small pieces and the small local material in the big city. In front of this gate of the temple, the location is in front of this interesting temple. So we divide the building into seven seven stories, and in each story, people can feel that I'm living on the ground, and this is a section of the building. And those triangular space between floor and roof were used for mechanical, and then each floor can have the higher ceiling, so rendering the reality, and the facades are covered by real wood, small theaters, and the rooftop gardens. As a bamboo is another interesting material. In China, we did try the bamboo for this small hotel. So besides Great Wall, and at first, we didn't cut the topography of the place. In 20th century, so how to separate ground and the building was an important theme of design. Like pilotis, ground and the box are divided, separated. But I don't like that kind of separation. I try to combine ground and the building, and the building itself is following the topography of the place, and then eventually we can keep the greenery, and the Great Wall is here, and of course bamboo is as a very local material in China and very cheap material, and then client like to use bamboo. I'm afraid as a client like or not, but they said bamboo is cheap. Okay, please use bamboo. And this is a main space, main lounge of this hotel. And in China, this is as a new project in China. I did use the roof ceramic tiles. We kept the topography. The site used to be the tea field, and as a beautiful hill. So I didn't want to cut the beautiful hill, and as a building is following the topography like that, and the materials we chose is as a old ceramic tiles, and as it's a recycle of the old tiles. The details for the tiles, those roofs are covered by tiles. And those screens, also we did use tile, but suspended by the very tiny stainless wire. And this morning, I saw the new serpentine, the pavilion. It was made by the ceramic tile. But as a joint is not so transparent like that, and we try to find the transparent transparency as possible as can. And the detail was like that. And the effect was like that. So it's another screens to filter the light. And the floor is following the landscape. As we designed this new district, Chenmen. Chenmen is the south of Tiananmen. This is a map of China, map of Beijing. There's a square Forbidden Palace is in the center. And this is the Chenmen area was used to be like that. It's a kind of abandoned area. And some developers tried to build the skyscrapers in that area, but the people living there were against those project, and also the European and American media protested that kind of development. And finally, the Chinese government decided to preserve this area. But this area, is basically, there was no infrastructure, and each houses, still some people living, each houses didn't have a toilet, only public toilet. The winter of Beijing is very cold, but they should use as a public toilet outside of house. It's very tough condition. And then the new infrastructures came, and so we need to do some renovation. And this is after the renovation. As me and MVRD and two Chinese architects were working for that project. And we tried to find the small unit. As a black, as a beautiful brick, as were used in those old houses. But we thought it's not enough to create a screen. And then as a new material, tried here is the small aluminum cube. This is a detail of the joint. As bleak as is a flexible material, this aluminum extruded aluminum is also a very flexible material. The addition is very easy by this material, and we combine the bleak and the aluminum as a aluminum bleak, and to create the effect of transparency, also some privacy we can create. And actually, this is our office in Beijing, we decided to use this space because that area with a small courtyard is beautiful area. It became very beautiful area, and we are using this space. And interestingly, the main structure of this the courtyard houses in China, was wood. I didn't know that. I thought it's a masonry structure, but actually behind masonry structures, always wooden frame existed. And in Europe, we also try to find the interesting local material. There's a project in Besançon. The material we found here is the wood as large. And the existing building is also covered by that facade, and also we try to create that kind of engava space, in between space. And it's a project in Marseille, but it's not easy to find the local material in Marseille. I try to find, the material I know in Marseille is a fish, a bouillabaisse or something. But the people in Marseille showed me a very interesting glass factory. So they were producing recycled glass. And the texture of recycled glass, the effect of recycled glass is beautiful, and we decided to use that material for the facade. But the use as brick. And it's angled a little bit to get special effect and sometimes to cut strong natural light. And as in the center of Paris, this is the renovation of the old entrepot, and entrepot is a warehouse, and as a master plan, the building itself was built in 1970, and the master plan was done by OMA, and as a unique master plan, as OMA decided to divide the big volume, 600 meters building, into six pieces, six blocks, and keep the continuous structures, but on that structures, the six architects were invited. And I like that kind of the division. It's a bigger building, but it's a divided. So my part is the west end, and again, I try to find the small pieces. The small pieces, as I found here, is the zinc panel. The zinc was used for the roof in Paris for a long time. And so we tried to create as a facade made by zinc. And inside of the zinc, we have the wood, like the roof. Like the roof is the same. The zinc and the wood is combined. The same as a strategy for the new station in Paris, Saint-Denis Player Station, is close to Saint-Denis Football Stadium. Actually, this is not a safe area in Paris, as many immigrants are living in that area, and this is not a safe area. But the idea of the city of Paris is to create public space, and for the competition, we propose the rooftop public space with greenery, and also we propose to use wood for the station. But it wasn't easy because the area is not safe at all, and the client, the SNCF, National Railway Company, the people, for them, safety is very important. To use it is very fire is dangerous. But we found a special treatment on wood, and that treatment can avoid as a graffiti on wood as well. And today, I want to show Japan House because in London, a new Japan House was opened last week. Yesterday, really. Yesterday, Japan House is a. It's a kind of cultural as a museum and to introduce Japanese as a contemporary culture and the traditional cultures, and we designed a Japan House in São Paulo. In case of London, it houses in a landmark building, and the designers, it was not allowed to touch the facade. In London, the interior designer did that. But São Paulo, I could touch the facade. And also, the building itself was not so elegant as the London building. London building was beautiful stone building, but São Paulo is a building was not a normal building. luckily, I could add the new facade. It is a Paulista Avenue. It is a main avenue in São Paulo. This is a very important avenue. As you know, as a São Paulo Modern Art Museum, as a designed by Lina Bobaldi, was there. As interesting architecture, as a lining on that street. Still, the São Paulo is a city of concrete and the city of stone. I want to show the some Japanese-ness there, because São Paulo is the biggest Japanese community exists. And now more than 1 million Japanese community exists in São Paulo. And the day, as a Brazilian and Japanese living in São Paulo, they want to use this Japan House as a center of community. And then we propose to use wood for this building. This is a detail of the facade, new facade. We add the new facade to the building. And in that case, we combine the wood from Japan and the wood from Brazil. Wood from Brazil is actually stronger than Japanese wood. And then we combine two things. It's the same as Japanese and Brazilian communities, a mix of two different cultures. And it is a very exciting project for us. And because we could learn many things from Brazil, you know the Brazilian concrete block? The Brazilian concrete block, its name is Cobedo. Cobedo is a very cheap material, but it's very good for filtering natural light. And we design the Cobedo of Kuma version, and this is a detail of our Cobedo. This is a block, but it looks like aggregation of lines, and then we try to break the size of block, and we want to particleize as a block as possible, as small as possible. And again, it's very cheap material. This is interior. The interior of Japan House in London is so fancy, so beautiful. But in Brazil, I want to pick up some roughness of Brazilian culture. And I brought this craftsman from Japan. And he's a rice paper craftsman. And he and us worked together to create that screen. It's a metal mesh plus rice paper, the liquid that is mixed together. And also he worked with Brazilian young student. And he taught the technique to Brazilian young student, this bamboo. Mm-hmm. And it's a Brazilian Japan house, so we did use Japanese wood, Brazilian wood, plus carbon fiber. So the carbon fiber is very strong material, and the carbon fiber can tie those small unit, and it's seven times stronger than stainless wire, and much lighter, and we did a reinforcement of old existing factory by carbon fiber. And this company is Komatsu Seiren. They are producing many interesting fabric. They are working with Issey Miyake for pleats, pleats of Issey Miyake. And many interesting technique they have. And they are the specialists of fabric and textiles. I decided to use the carbon fiber. It's a kind of fabric to do the reinforcement of the existing building. This is a structural analysis of the carbon fiber, and this is a detail of carbon fiber. The building behind the fiber is the 1970s and as a very normal cheap building. And in that building, we also use very unique textile for every part of the building. And for Portland Japanese Gardens, is our second American project. Some kind of Japanese-ness was required by the client. It has a roof, but the roof of the second floor, we did use a special ceramic tile, and that tile can be the base of a greenery. And it looks traditional, but actually in Japan, traditionally we didn't use green on the for the roof. This is a very new idea. And the finally, the brand day in Dundee. Yesterday, we had some event there. And the inspiration came from the cliff of Scotland. So because the location is very unique. The location is sit just beside river. Actually, we push the building into water. And the building is a border, working as a border between water and land. And the we want to create arch, some cut which connect nature and city, like Hiroshige Museum, and also like Besançon project in France. Besançon project is river and site. Also, we cut the building. We have a hole to connect those two things. This is a view from river, and the main structure should be concrete because very strong wind and the wave and the very tough climate, we need the concrete. But we try to change the image of concrete by adding precast concrete, the bars. The number of bars is 5,000, 2,000, 3,000. Every bar has a different shape and length. And we want to add the building as a kind of aggregation of a small unit. And by shifting the bar, so we can we try to create a kind of roughness, as a kind of imperfection. So for this kind of condition, as a straight wall, a straightness of industrialization, is not appropriate, we thought. And then how to make the organic building by those materials is the theme of the project. And the waters that we found, water is very strong material. The next to this building, we have this ship, the Discovery. Maybe you know this ship, the captain. Scott did use that ship for his adventures, and the waters can combine landscape and this building and the existing Discovery. And the water is always as a moving and as a flowing, and the building is also try to create a kind of flow as a flowing impression. The hole is a cut which connects river and the city. Before that project started, the waterfront of Dundee was totally occupied by the industrial building, factory, warehouse. It happened everywhere in the harbor in 20th century. But now that kind of function is not needed anymore. People want to go to the waterfront, to the edge, and then this project is a good example to reconnect nature and city life. It'd be the theme of 21st century's urban design. In Delhi also, we use wood, and also wood is not straight. And the vibrating, the waving, to create the new type of roughness, the new type of the imperfection. Thank you very much.
thank you so much for such a fantastic tour through your projects. I think I'd like to, well, we're going to come to the audience soon for questions, but I want to kick off by talking about the kind of continuity in the projects and this incredible sense of the layering that you picked up in the first images, which sort of ran through all the projects. And how do you, as the projects evolve, the process that you go through, do you work through models, or how do you generate that sort of idea?
Yeah, as a physical model is very, very important for us. We often use a physical model in as a for discussion. I don't want to make sketch. If the architects make sketch, and people cannot ignore the sketch. And the free discussion cannot happen. Mm-hmm. And then our office basically makes a model in the center of the table, and as a discussions of 3-4 team members, mm-hmm. and it's a very free atmosphere, and without a physical model, the discussion become very abstract. Mm-hmm. We don't like that kind of conceptual talking. So we want to find the best material, the best detail, the best size of particle. Mm-hmm. So for finding that kind of the solution, the physical model is very helpful, because the 3D rendering is very useful to explain the project to the client, but at the same time to find the good size, the physical model is more helpful. And another point of our method is we did use the computers for almost every project. Mm. Using the traditional material and working with craftsmen, but finding the solution to use the computer is very necessary. Mm. And one example, grasshopper. Maybe better than the grasshopper, and for this kind of as a unit aggregation project, how to decide the size of a unit and the distance of the unit, we have too many possibilities, and also the decision is very much related with structure. Of the building, and the structure engineers and we communicating by sending the data on the same platform, and for that kind of on time communication, as a computer is very necessary, and then we try to do is combine the computer technology with the traditional natural material, and to use the material is not nostalgic solution.
And what comes first when you start making these models? Is the idea often a spatial one or a tectonic one, or how do you access?
So the beginning of the project is mainly the spatial one, but the uniqueness of our method is from the beginning of project. So we try to find the appropriate material. Mm. For example, the project in China, the ceramic blue ceramic tile project, before starting the planning, we decided to use ceramic tile for the project, because the study of material takes a long time. Actually, the roof ceramic tile, how to fix the roof ceramic tile by stainless wire, as a needs long process of study, and then we started that study from the beginning of project, and we started the planning, and we started the volume study and etc. From the beginning, but at the same time, the study of details started from the beginning of project. It's parallel. And normal method of architectural design is volume studies, facade design, and at the last phase, the material should be that brick or wood. But we follow that the process, we cannot find time to do the research on material. And then the research should start from the very beginning of the project.
And at the V&A Dundee, I read that the walls sort of halved in depth from the beginning working with the engineer to the end. Can you say a bit about the process of working with the engineer and what stage they come in at?
Yeah, so in case of V&A, the facade is very challenging. And then we changed the detail many times. And the engineer, the collaboration of engineer is not easy because we change many times and basically the engineers don't want to repeat the study because the fee is already fixed.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to create a good, the better building, to repeat is very necessary. And finally, the engineer of V&A has found a very good solution. I'm very satisfied with the solution.
And how do you find the right clients who are kind of open to this approach that you go through? Is it ever challenging to convince them of the design process?
Yes. Sometimes to change the scheme, to change the detail, make client unhappy. To explain, we try to explain the process. We try to show the process to the client. If we do the research in the secret doors, they are not so happy. But again, it's the same as a relationship with the craftsman. And we should learn together for the project.
As you've, from the beginning of the work that you showed, there's this huge kind of continuous thread running through it. But I'm curious, how has your process changed at all as you've become more international and worked in more far-flung contexts? Have you adapted how you work?
Yeah, for bigger international projects, we try to do the same method, recently, the clients themselves want to see the new idea. Mm. It's very different from the age of 1980s and 90s. 1980s and 90s. Every client want to have the one brand. Mm. Okay, this style, understand, okay, perfect. But now the client doesn't satisfied with repeating. Mm. They also want to have the new challenge. And from client side, we are said, please, Kuma-san, show me the new challenge, new material. They are pushing, and then for that kind of new challenge, the process is getting harder. But we both understand the toughness of the project.
I'm going to open it up to the floor for some questions. Does anyone have a question from? Actually, let's look up here. Does anyone got a question from the gallery? Over there, this chap here. Can we get a microphone to you? One sec.
if it's not a secret, what was the treatment for the project in France for fire safety?
The wooden project, Besançon project, you said.
Yes.
And in France, as a building code as a village for each countries, and in France with some special paint, so we can get the permission for inflammable wood. But in Japan, so we should need some more complicated treatment on wood, and each country has a different requirement.
While we're on the topic of fire, do you want to say something about the Macintosh tea house? This game?
It's very sad. It's very sad. As a Macintosh is Macintosh is a very interesting designer because he is a good example of cultural exchange between Japan and Europe. Mm. Like Vincent van Gogh, like Frank Lloyd Wright, he was inspired by Japanese ukiyo-e, and his water paint was very much influenced by Japanese ukiyo-e, and also his furniture, wooden works, was very much inspired by Japan. And I actually from the student time, I love his work very much, and luckily the V&A Dundee can show the new original tea room designed by Macintosh, this original material was kept in the factory in the warehouse. And 40 years as gift, and then that was reconstructed, and yesterday I saw that. It's really amazing. Mm.
Mm. And would that be part of the permanent collection there?
Yes. Yeah. But with the wood, we should be very careful. Yeah.
There was a question over here.
Hello, thank you very much. My question to you, Kuma-san, is I know that space is a big part of your philosophy, the space and the environment. What I'd like to ask you is, how do you use void when you do your ideas or your design? How is your process of thinking with the void? Could you elaborate, please?
Yes. It's a good question. The void is always a very important weapon for architectural design, and especially in Asia, in Asian culture, as a solidness void. If we compare, the void is more important than the solid. The creating those the unit assembly building, the void space between the unit is very very important. To decide the dimension of void is very critical for the project. And in case of V&A, we made the mock-up of the bar. And the concrete behind, and the many sections were tried, tested, and the many distance were tried, and many angles were tried to find the best solution of light and shadow. The void is related with shadow and shade, and in 20th century, people are thinking about the silhouette. This silhouette is beautiful. This silhouette is beautiful. But for our design, the void between the unit is very critical for design. It's more important than the silhouette of the building.
Question over here.
Mr. Kuma, I was fortunate enough to recently be living in Japan and perceive a lot of both traditional and modern Japanese architecture, including your works and especially. Fortunate enough to visit your exhibition at Tokyo Station Gallery. And I've become a great fan of Japanese architecture, architectural philosophy, especially the concept of wa, the theory of the power of nature. But I'd like to ask, I've become interested in the theory of diplomatic design, the fact that design should be made not as a luxury, but everyone should have the right to access good design for the betterment of people's lives. And also, as someone aspiring to be an architect in the future, is there any way as a foreigner to be able to work or study in Japan as an architect?
How to work outside of Japan is a question.
Did you say democratic design or diplomatic?
Diplomatic. Yeah.
Diplomatic. yeah, as a communication is most important for realizing that kind of project, especially as for each project, we try to find the unique material and the unique craftsmanship, and so we should communicate with them as factories and craftsmen very closely. And in that sense, it's a cultural exchange with others, and it's kind of a diplomatic process. But I'm not
democratic.
But I'm not so polite as a diplomat. And to be the good friends is most important. And if we can establish a good relationship, naturally, a good solution can be found. And always, how to become the friends is important. And then to drink with them is very important. everywhere there. Actually in China, especially to drinking the pai chu is very important for communication. And each place is that kind of communication is very helpful to achieve the project.
We're going to come to this guy here in front, and then I'm going to pick out a few more people. So the guy over there, if we can go to him after that, and then this man up here for you, and then is there anyone over here? The guy in the blue shirt over there next. Okay, sorry.
Kuma-san, you've always been against building monuments here, and you've written extensively about things like anti-object, right? When you build around, when you build monuments in some ways, quote unquote monument like the Olympic Stadium, right? How do you rationalize your anti-object views with building what is of public significance?
Yeah, as a monumentality is very difficult issue for every architect. And when I wrote the book and anti-object, I did criticize the monumental building, if we have a chance to build a big building, some kind of monumentality is coming with the building, for example, the Buyan Day, I had many questions about the monumentality of the Buyan Day. As people said, it's a very strong monument. They said, I like this monument. But how is the relation with your anti-object? the approach of Buyan Day is we try to create the new type of bigger building, learn from landform, learn from the landscape, that kind of the monumentality. So we try to achieve an Buyan Day, and as a former generation, the style and the brand of architects applied to the monumental building. Mm. But wait, I don't like that to repeat that kind of method. But still, we cannot avoid the monumentality, and how to create new type of monumentality is not an easy word. But the national stadium we are designing, it is the silhouette is very flat and very low, but still, should be impressive. And then we try to find the solution. And I want to say about the comparison with Kenzo Tange building. Kenzo Tange, he designed the Olympic Stadium, the 1964 first Tokyo Olympic. And the 1964, Japan was in the age of economical expansion. Stepping up like that. The country is very young and energetic, and Kenzo Tange translated that kind of energy by his building. It's a very monumental structure system, the two strong columns and the roof were suspended from those two strong columns. Vertically is going to heaven, that kind of building. But on the contrary, 2020, already Japan is slowing down, and the economy is slowing down, and the population is and a few kids is aging. So we have many problems, but I think it is not bad. So we should enjoy that kind of situation. Mm. And I try to translate that kind of situation into the flat building and the wooden building. And the Kenzo Tange, he did use the steel and concrete, but steel and concrete was 1964. It is steel and concrete was a symbol of the period. Mm. And the other building in 1964, I found the image of Kenzo Tange building in 1964, the surroundings are wooden buildings, the one-story, two-story buildings. And in that field, Kenzo Tange's building stand out. His genius. He translates the period, the spiritual period.
Yeah.
And 2020, I want to do the similar method, but the result is totally opposite.
Limiting the scale of the building to the structure, so it's very human scale, it must have a very different effect in terms of how you experience it. Is that quite important in terms of how you want the structure to be read by the people using it?
So should structure be read?
To be read or readable, so it's not hidden.
Yes, yeah, so the structure, but I did use word, the human engagement. The human engagement is people can understand how to make building. As a wooden building in Japan, the column and the beam are basically exposed, and how to make the building is very visible, and people can feel building was built like that. But as a concrete building is a kind of secret, is a secret big volume, big mass.
Yep.
And masonry and brick building also human engagement exists. So piece by piece, the materials units are stacked, and the process is very visible. And in 20th century, the structure people thought structure should be expressed, this should be shown, but the structure in 20th century. Is as a basically a frame structures is a big beam and a big column, but brick structures are different. The brick structures is the small pieces are gathered, and no strong frame, but still structurally strong, and people can feel it's a safe building. And the goal of our structure is the structure like that.
Question over here.
Hello? Okay, that works. Hi, I just wanted to ask some questions, kind of all linked together, about the Starbucks building in Dzaifutemangu. I just wanted to know, like, how did that happen? Did they approach you, or, like, what kind of brief did they give you? And then following on from that, how did you approach giving, like, the talk today, how did you approach adding unique identity to a chain like Starbucks? It's a very beautiful building. I'm just wondering how you kind of thought, how you added an identity to such a big company for that particular building.
Today I didn't show Starbucks project. Maybe you know
people
Starbucks
should project. Check it out. It's really nice.
This is a very interesting experience. And normally the Starbucks and were designed by in-house designers. In Seattle, they have the big in-house design office. I heard 1,000 people are working as designers in Starbucks, and every Starbucks was designed from Seattle. But as my Starbucks project, Starbucks is a franchisee. The franchise is over that place. It's close to the old temple. He wanted to work with us, and then he proposed to use Kengokuma for Starbucks, and it's not usual for Starbucks, but Starbucks as a response is it's a unique location in front of old temple, exception is okay for this kind of unique process, even for a big chain, identity, the identity of place is important. I felt, and after my Starbucks was completed. So I was invited by Starbucks, and I did a lecture for the design of Starbucks, and I said, don't repeat the design. For every project, you should find the uniqueness of the place. And after the lectures, the founder of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, and recently he decided to resign, Howard Schultz invited me, and he's a very smart guy, and he showed me his collection of Japanese art. He's a collector, Gutai is a series of Japanese art, it's 1960s. He was a big collector of this. And he said, I totally agree with my comment. Starbucks should find the uniqueness for each place. Don't repeat, we should be different from McDonald's. even the big brand, they are trying to find the new type of the chain. It's a basically a trend.
Come over here for the final question.
Hello. Thank you for that interesting presentation. I was fascinated that you chose to show the trailer building as your final project, and it's a residential, partly residential project. With increasing population across the world, rising urbanization across the world, we're having big debates, particularly in London, about decreasing the space standards for residential accommodation, particularly related to the costs of living in London, New York, Tokyo. There's also lots of debate about micro flats, small flats, space standards. The project you chose to show at the end, is that something that you're looking at to perhaps develop further in residential high-scale buildings?
Yes. That's the reason why I chose that project in the last of the lectures. And I criticize the concrete box. Instead of concrete box, I try to find a new design. But more than design, we should find a new lifestyle. Instead of big apartment, and instead of the beautiful fancy house in suburb, we should find some kind of the new nomadic lifestyle. The solution from the public side, from the government, the people cannot get the solution. And then from the designers, we can show some solution. It is not so realistic, I think. Still, if people want to live in that kind of elderly people want to live in that trailer, it is that many difficulties will happen. But 100% is not necessary to be 100% realistic. But we should show there's some possibility of new living style. That's the reason why I'm working for that. And actually, some cities and some companies want to buy the trailer to create a new type of hotel, a trailer hotel, or trailer's apartment. Those new trials is happening because of that trend. And the design can show some small triggers, but it's important.
I think, sadly, we're out of time. We could go on all evening. I'm sorry. I'm sure there's lots of questions. But thank you very much, Kengo Kuma. Please join me in congratulating our speaker.